And our first guest today is the Libertarian candidate for President of the United States and my friend, Michael Badnarik. Welcome to the show, sir.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's great to have you back on the show, Michael.
Thanks so much. We are in the home stretch. I think we have about 80 hours before the campaign is over and the polls close in California. And I think the Libertarian Party is going to do extremely well on Tuesday.
I'm looking forward to this year being the best showing for the Libertarian Party in history. What do you think?
I think that's very, very true. We have been around for 33 years, and the campaign this last year has been extremely productive. Statistically, a year and a half ago, 50% of the people in the United States had never even heard of the Libertarian Party. Since then, we've been doing 6 to 12 interviews a day. We've been getting really great coverage. We've collected just under $1 million for this campaign and spent $300,000 on television commercials, many of which are being broadcast nationwide as we speak. And the number of people who have heard of the Libertarian Party is now at 76%, an increase of 26% from a year and a half ago. And even more amazing is the fact that in our polls, we've discovered that 32% of the people in the United States know my name, which is amazing simply because in May, during the National Convention, there were libertarians who didn't know my name. So we have had a really excellent effect. There are going to be approximately 70 million new Americans who could possibly vote for us this year. And statistically, Ralph Nader is on the ballot, 35 states. He has 50.3% of the population that will have an opportunity to cast a vote for Ralph Nader. I'm on the ballot in 48 states, and 98.3% of the people will be able to vote for me, which means that we fully expect to get twice as many votes as Ralph Nader does.
Well, it'd be interesting to see the media explain why they've been paying attention to him and not you this whole time if you beat him that badly.
Yes, that would be a little bit of a problem for them. The local media, to be kind, local media has been very good to us. They've been treating me like a legitimate candidate from a legitimate party. And when you call up and say that you have a presidential candidate available to be interviewed, they have been very supportive. And most of the interviews that I've done this year have been extremely receptive. The national media, however, has avoided mentioning my name. David Cobb of the Green Party and I tried to attend the second debate in St. Louis, Missouri, and we crossed the police lines. We were arrested, handcuffed, and put into a police van, and that did not reach national media.
No, in fact, I was watching the debate at my house, and I had learned earlier in the day what was going to happen with you and David Cobb. And I was waiting intently for them to break into the debate and just say, you know, this note, the Libertarian and the Green were just arrested out front for trying to participate, and they did not even mention it.
That's going on
outside did not get a single mention on the debate on TV.
And that can only be explained by a deliberate avoidance of third parties.
Yes, well, we don't want anybody mucking up the wonderful system that we have now, sir.
Well, Henry Ford once said that you can have your car painted any color you want as long as it's black. Well, that clearly is not a choice. And the Democrats and Republicans are currently trying to convince people that you can have any president you want as long as it's George Bush or John Kerry.
Yeah. All right. Hang tight right there, everybody. Michael Badnarik is the Libertarian candidate for President of the United States of America. We'll be right back on the Weekend Interview Show. Everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm your host, Scott Horton, and the guest is Michael Badnarik. He's a scuba diving instructor, a skydiving instructor, a computer programmer, and all-around fun-filled guy. He's running for President of the United States of America as a Libertarian. And, Michael, on the way out to the last break, you were saying that you can have any president you want as long as it's Bush or Kerry. And that brings up the question, since, you know, as you discussed, we're really hoping for, you know, 2 or 3% here, maybe something over a million votes. So when you recognize the fact that, in fact, we really can only have Bush or Kerry, and this is such a very close national election, why should anybody vote for a third-party candidate when the split is this close between the two major party candidates?
Well, when you vote for the lesser of two evils and your candidate wins, you still get evil. If you want liberty, you have to vote for liberty. You have to vote your conscience. Why would you vote for someone who's going to continue the war, restore the draft, continue to pass unconstitutional laws like the Patriot Act, and continue operating the government at a deficit budget? I'm not willing to contribute to my own destruction, and that's why I am continuing to light the fires of liberty one heart at a time.
Well, you know, the problem is the immediate answer, obviously I'm voting for you, but the immediate answer that I think most people would come up with is, well, the reason I would vote for someone who's going to continue the war and increase spending at deficit levels, et cetera, is because he is a little bit less evil than the other guy, and the other guy just has to lose. And even libertarians lately, and reading around on the Internet, some people are endorsing Kerry, some people are endorsing Bush, some people are endorsing you, some people are endorsing not voting at all, but even among libertarians, there's some who would choose the lesser of two evils, Michael.
Well, that's actually a false choice. Eventually, the wasted vote argument has to fail. If you were given a choice between Joseph Stalin, who killed 25 to 30 million of his own people, and Adolf Hitler, who only killed 12 million people, I mean, are you likely to vote for Adolf Hitler because he was the lesser of two evils, knowing that 12 million people are going to die? It's not acceptable. If I offer you arsenic and strychnine, which one are you going to pick? I mean, both of them are going to kill you. I mean, you're really, you know, the only...
So Kerry's arsenic and Bush is strychnine?
As far as I'm concerned, they are both unacceptable. Neither one of them recognizes constitutional limitations on their authority. Neither one of them admits that they have limited power when they get elected to office. The only thing that they take the oath of office for is to protect our lives, our liberty, and our property. And they clearly have every intention of doing more than that. Why would they spend hundreds of millions of dollars for a job that only pays $400,000? Clearly, it's for the level of power that they think that they are going to have. I am not willing to believe that either of them genuinely has the best interests of Americans at heart, not when they both supported the Patriot Act.
Yeah, John Kerry even helped write it.
Yes, he did.
Well, what do you say to those libertarians and anarchists who say that voting at all, even for you, is actually just helping to grant legitimacy to Bush or Kerry, who one of them is going to win? And then, of course, the Bushites or the Kerryites can say, well, you got your say. You had an opportunity to vote, and your guy didn't win.
Right. Well, to the anarchists, the anarchist argument saying that, you know, they're not willing to vote, that's a little bit like being in a dark alley and having a criminal come up to you with pointing a gun and asking you for your wallet and responding, well, I'm a pacifist. I'm you know, like to be non-involved and trying to ignore it. At some point in your life, you can't ignore it. You know, walking away is not an option when someone is trying to use the force to threaten your life and threaten your liberties. The only way that you can survive is to fight back. And the only way to fight back legitimately in this case is to vote for libertarians who recognize that it's not the people in office who are dangerous. It is the fact that the office, the government, has far too much power. And libertarians are going to reduce that power. The Democrats want to be in office because they think they are the best person to run your life. The Republicans want to be in office because they think they are the best persons to run your life. Libertarians are trying to get in office to get the government to stop running their lives and let you run your own life. We would basically be placeholders to make sure that the government doesn't become even more corrupt than it already is.
And so if we don't fight back now through the process of voting, you believe that it's going to come to a fight one way or another?
Well, it would have to. Patrick Henry said that, you know, he was going to fight for either liberty or death. I mean, I'm not willing to be a slave. I'm not willing to, you know, work, you know, 5 months a year to support the government. I'm not willing to support a candidate who's going to get us involved in additional foreign wars and have our sons and daughters killed, you know, fighting for free elections in Iraq. I'd like to have free elections in the United States.
Yeah.
I saw a bumper sticker that said, Diebold, making machines that vote so you don't have to.
Right. Yeah, and actually that brings up a question about this election. And the idea that, again, this election could be decided by the courts, that there are enough problems with these computerized voting machines for people to be able to legitimately contest statewide election results.
Absolutely. I've been a programmer for longer than I care to admit. And if you allow me to write the programs for those computers and allow me to keep the software a secret, I will tell you who's going to win the election before the polls even open. Unless there is a paper trail, some way that we can have, you know, hard evidence of the way that people voted, there is absolutely nothing that prevents the people in charge from, you know, arbitrarily deciding, you know, who they want to win in a given election.
All right, let's switch gears here and talk about foreign policy. Now, I know you're opposed to the war in Iraq, but we do have a problem with a band of terrorists that want to kill as many Americans as they can. And I'm interested in how a libertarian such as yourself, if elected president of the United States, how you would go about fighting against those terrorists and keeping America safe while at the same time not taking away our liberty.
Well, we have to stop using this shotgun approach and just, you know, sending military, you know, all over the world. We absolutely have a right and a responsibility to protect the lives, liberty, and property of Americans. September 11th was a terrible tragedy, and we should use whatever force is necessary to track down those people and bring the perpetrators to justice. Osama bin Laden recently released a video all but claiming responsibility for September 11th. So we have unquestioned evidence that he and the al-Qaeda were responsible, and yet we still haven't been able to track him down and bring him to justice. And I am just not willing to believe that with all of the intelligence organizations that we have and with the elite military forces that we have, that we don't know where he is and that we couldn't bring him to the United States for trial. The reason that we haven't found him is because we've been focusing our energy over in Iraq. And Iraq did not have weapons of mass destruction. There's no evidence that they had any connection with September 11th. And in general, our interventionist policy has been generating problems for the United States. Whenever we bomb buildings and kill innocent civilians, we create more terrorists than there already are. If we kill five terrorists in a building explosion, there are like 50 other people who will sign up. And so we can either continue what we're doing and increase the threat of terrorism. We could go to Iraq and kill everybody and then safely say that nobody in Iraq hates us, but everybody else in the world would be far more concerned about the United States. Or we can do the one rational thing and bring our sons and daughters home as safely and quickly as possible and stop causing additional trouble.
Well, how do we protect America from, I agree with you that our foreign policy in the past has created these monsters that we're dealing with today, but if we can assume that we still have some of these people running around the United States or on their way here in order to commit another terrorist attack like September 11th, what can or should the government do to protect America? After all, this is the slogan of George Bush, is who do you trust to keep you safe and secure?
Well, let me say that libertarians are not pacifists. We are not going to wait until after a building blows up before we protect our citizens. We have every right to do a preemptive strike. If we have clear evidence, a clear and present danger that another country is going to pose an attack, we can intercept that, you know, 24, 48 hours ahead of schedule. But there has to be a clear and present danger with clear evidence. We can't just go and do a preventative strike and, you know, start sending military because a country may get strong enough in the future or they may have nuclear weapons in the future. The truth is that the nuclear genie is already out of the bottle. We have no way to control whether other countries get nuclear weapons. Many countries around the world already have nuclear weapons, and the only reasonable protection that we have is to establish a foreign policy which doesn't motivate other countries to use their nuclear weapons. We should follow George Washington's advice that he gave us during his farewell address, and that advice is to maintain economic ties with all countries and entangling alliances with none. We should open up our free markets, buy and sell from other countries. That would improve our economy. It would raise the standard of living of other countries, and it would dramatically reduce the probability that they would want to blow up our buildings, especially if we're selling them, you know, food and cell phones.
Sure. Well, and but what about, you know, Michael Badnarik is on an airplane, and some hijacker takes over the thing. What do you do?
Well, in a libertarian society, Michael Badnarik and, you know, two or more other passengers pull out their weapons, and we stop the hijackers before they get past the beverage cart. We have a right to protect ourselves on the ground. We also have a right to protect ourselves in the air. And I'm going to eliminate the FAA, allow each airline to decide what security measures it wants to have. And if there is an airline which allows me to fly with my gun, and that is the only airline that I would fly.
All right, everybody, it's the Weekend Interview Show. The guest is Michael Badnarik. He deserves your vote. He's running for president of the United States. All right, everybody, welcome back to my Weekend Interview Show. My name is Scott Horton, and every Saturday from 3 to 5, I bring you the very best liberty-loving guests in America to talk about the follies of American empire and their love of individual liberty. And fitting very neatly into that category is my friend and presidential candidate, Michael Badnarik. He's a libertarian, and he's running against Bush and Kerry this Tuesday. Now, Michael, I think we pretty much covered foreign policy pretty well here, and we need to move to the welfare state. Now, you know, when most people, when I make my libertarian arguments as I travel around, an argument that people bring up to me quite often is that, hey, America's a democracy, and we made it this way on purpose. So you do all this complaining about the warfare state and the welfare state, and you know, the government did this and the government did that, but hey, we elect our congressmen, we elect our presidents, we want them to do these things. That's why it is this way, is because we set it up to be this way.
That's a mistake, as you well know. The United States is not a democracy. The word democracy never appears a single time in the Declaration, Constitution, or Bill of Rights. Instead, we are a republic, a constitutional republic, as, you know, evidenced by I pledge allegiance to the flag and to the republic for which it stands. And the difference between a democracy and a republic is that in a democracy, you can vote on anything. 51% of the people can vote away the rights and or property of the minority. And so in a democracy, you only have privileges which are granted to you by the will of the majority. So, you know, if most of the people decide that they don't like you, they can basically put you to death because everybody voted. Well, in a republic, your rights and your property supersede a unanimous vote. Nobody can vote to take away your freedom of speech. Nobody can vote to take away your right to keep and bear arms. And nobody can vote to take away your property and use it for someone else's good. Therefore, eminent domain, which is getting so much press these days, is patently unconstitutional. The government has no authority to do that. And so the welfare state that derives from, you know, socialist democracy is also unconstitutional. Welfare is theft. If you come into my house and take $100 and use it for your health care or for your housing, that's theft. And if you have the government come into my house and take that $100 and give it to you, that is government-authorized theft, and libertarians are adamantly opposed to both types.
Well, wouldn't it be more correct to say that taxation itself is theft? Because I imagine there are plenty of big, fat bureaucrats sitting on their butt doing nothing, making a lot more money working for the executive branch than a single mother makes from her welfare check.
Well, taxation per se is not necessarily theft. It is specified in the Constitution. In fact, the Constitution was written because the Articles of Confederation had no provision for the government to tax.
Well, constitutional or not, I mean, somebody holding a gun to your head and taking your money is still somebody holding a gun to your head and taking your money, right?
That's true. And your listening audience probably knows that the Constitution was ratified in 1789, and the IRS didn't come into existence until 1913, which means we had well over 100 years with no IRS, no income tax, and the American government had more money than we knew what to do with. Well, that was only possible because the federal government was limited to Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. The federal government used to be extremely small, and it was easy to pay for the federal government using excise taxes. When other countries would try to import something into our into the United States, we would charge them a small import tax, and that small tax was enough to fund all of the things the federal government was authorized to do, like national defense, coining money, operating the post office, and that's all. Every time we create another federal agency, you're going to have to pay for the lights, the air conditioning, the people sitting at the desks. Federal government is a parasite on the economy, and libertarians want to dramatically reduce the size of the federal government. We want to leave billions of dollars in the hands of ordinary Americans, and those Americans are probably going to do something stupid like pay off their credit cards and spend whatever money they have left over, and we'll have small businesses springing up to provide goods and services that will raise our standard of living, and our economy will grow exponentially. Everybody in the United States will have more liberty and more prosperity.
Well, what about the guy who has no friends or family and his neck is broken and he's paraplegic and he's got nobody to take care of him? Do we just let him die?
Absolutely not. Americans are the most generous culture on the face of the earth. We will never allow our elderly or disadvantaged to starve to death.
All right, hang tight right there. Michael Badnarik is a libertarian candidate for President of the United States. We'll be right back on the Weekend Interview Show on the Republic Broadcasting Network. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton, and the guest is Michael Badnarik. He's the libertarian candidate for President of the United States. Anybody wants to call in and ask a question of Michael Badnarik, the phone number is 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. And now, Michael, when we went out to break, the question was whether in a libertarian society where government is not empowered to help people survive but only to protect their rights, the question was, how do we go about caring for people who have no one to help care for them?
American culture is the most generous culture on the face of the earth. We contributed over $5 billion to the city of New York within 1 month of September 11th. We will never allow our elderly or disadvantaged to starve to death. The best way to take care of people is to make the economy strong and allow people to take care of themselves. And if there are still people at the bottom of the spectrum who are unable to take care of themselves, Americans will have more money to be generous with. The Salvation Army, the American Red Cross, local churches and civics groups, those are the people who can and should be distributing money to the people who really need it. When you have the government welfare system, the unfortunate thing is you separate the people who give the money from the people who get the money, and there's no oversight. The people who are giving the money continue to write their checks, and they assume that the government is managing things responsibly, but the government doesn't really monitor the people who are on welfare. It doesn't discriminate against the people who need our help and the people who are just too lazy to work and who want to, you know, have a free ride. If your neighbor was out of a job, undoubtedly you would let them, you know, sleep on the couch and you'd give them a good meal, but you'd expect them to go out, you know, with their resume looking for another job. If they came over and just sat on the couch eating bonbons and watching TV, after a while, you'd be tired of supporting your neighbor, and you would throw them back out on the street. If they're not willing to help themselves, then you certainly aren't willing to help them. And so if local groups and church groups are the ones who are distributing the welfare, they will make sure the people who genuinely need the help get it, and they will get better help. And that the people who are just being lazy and who just want to be lazy and not take care of themselves, those are the people who will be off of the welfare rolls.
Very good. You ready to take some calls?
I am ready to take calls.
Our phone number up here is 800-313-9443. 800-313-9443. We're taking calls for Michael Badnarik, the Libertarian candidate for President of the United States. First up is Jimmy. Welcome to the show, Jimmy.
Hey, guys. What's happening?
Hi. How are you?
Doing good. Hey, Michael, I got a question for you. I noticed you were in the New American's most recent issue. They mentioned the third-party candidates. And one thing I've never been 100% clear on, but I think I know the answer, and they may have misstated something, was they said the Libertarian Party is for entirely open borders and open immigration and what have you. I mean, I always assumed that if the Libertarian Party upheld the Constitution, that they would look at, what is it, Article 4, I believe, I'm not sure, you know, protecting the states against invasion and guaranteeing them a Republican form of government. So I would assume the Libertarian Party would support immigration coming in as long as it was legalized immigration.
Yes. Well, okay. There are a number of answers to this question, a number of facets to it, really. The first thing that we want to do is eliminate the socialist welfare state.
Right.
A lot of people are coming to the United States to get free health care, free housing, free education. And, you know, frankly, I don't want to pay for your free housing. I don't want to pay for anybody else's housing except my own. And so we want to get rid of this welfare state to eliminate one excuse for people to come here. Unfortunately, a lot of people who do come here are illegal immigrants only because it's easier to cross the Rio Grande than it is to climb the mountain of paperwork. What we want to do is make it easier for people to be here legally so we know who is here and what they're planning to do and where they're staying, and to acknowledge that we need a lot of these people here to help maintain our economy. If it was possible to move these people back to Mexico, then, unfortunately, our economy would suffer, and the economy of our border states may close in on collapse. But thirdly, and also as important, the purpose of the Constitution is to protect our lives, liberty, and property. And we have drug dealers and coyotes trafficking in human lives, and I'm told even the Mexican military crossing the American border, damaging property and killing Americans. And we need to use the police force and or military as appropriate for the situation to protect Americans.
Does that
well
answer your
stated
question, Jimmy?
It definitely does. Well stated, sir. I appreciate it. Casting my vote
pleasure
for you.
Thank
on
you.
Tuesday.
Thank you.
You bet.
All right. Barry is next on the phone. Barry, you have a question for Mr. Badnarik.
I do. I have a two-part question. Is that allowed?
Sure.
Okay. They're both about taxes.
Okay.
The first one is that I remember recently we've had a couple of candidates who were in support of a volunteer tax system for the United States. And I wonder what has happened to all the proponents for the volunteer, or if not the volunteer, then the percentage tax, like 10% of our net, et cetera.
Right. I've never heard of a volunteer tax. I don't know what that initiative was. but I'm opposed to a flat tax, unless, of course, it's a 0% tax. I want to eliminate the IRS completely. The IRS only came into existence in 1913, well over 100 years after the Constitution was ratified. We didn't have an income tax. The American government had more money than it knew what to do with. Well, that was only possible because the federal government was limited. The federal government was extremely small, doing only things the state governments could not do, and it was easy to afford. I want to dramatically reduce the size of the federal government so we can afford to pay for it without an income tax. We can easily pay for it with an excise tax, just as the Founding Fathers had intended.
Is there a second part to that question, Barry?
Yes. I've heard that the Federal Reserve System is really not a Federal Reserve System of all. It's not. The Federal Reserve Bank is not federal. It has no reserves, and it's not a bank.
That's correct.
It is literally a front for the international money lenders that utilize American taxpayers to pay down the American debt that we borrow from the international lenders. Can you elaborate on that at all?
Well, that is correct. The Federal Express is not part of the post office, even though it has the word federal in it. And you can generally prove that the Federal Reserve Bank is not part of the U.S. government by using almost any phone book. If you go to the blue pages where the post office and the military and all of our federal offices are, you will not find Federal Reserve Bank. But if you go to the white business pages not far from Federal Express, you will find the Federal Reserve Bank, assuming that you have one in your town.
All right. Thank you very much for the call, Barry. The phone number, if anybody else wants to ask Michael Badnarik a question, the phone number is 1-800-313-9443. That's 800-313-9443. And I want to go to Tommy in a second, but I want to address the Fed thing right there for a second, if I can. The thing is about the Federal Reserve is that it's not that it's private and it's not that it's federal. The problem is that it's both. The board is appointed by the president, confirmed by the Senate. Now, the 12 member banks are privately owned. The stock is privately owned. However, they can't sell it. So it's not really, you know, private property in the sense that they can do anything with it. And the member banks aren't really the ones who call the shots. It's the Federal Reserve Board who are all political appointees. The reason the Fed is such a problem, in my eyes, is because not that it's private, but because it's government and because it has federal police power backing up its decisions. If they want the interest rate to be this or the amount of currency printed to be that, they get it. And it's because of the power of the national government of the United States, not because they're private banks. Do you agree with that?
Well, I agree that it is a problem, and I think that the problem is compounded by the fact that they print money out of thin air. And when they do that, the money you have in your wallet becomes worth less. The Federal Reserve has printed so much money that your money is now worthless.
Yes, very good. Okay, now, Tommy, you're next on the show. Question for Michael Badnarik.
Yeah, I have a question for you about privatization of certain government services.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on that? Because I look at certain government services that I see of value, like health departments for inspecting restaurants, et cetera, and so forth, and I wouldn't want to turn that over to a private entity to give that power away to anybody who could be making a profit on it.
Very good question.
Okay, I mean, it's a good question. My position is always for privatization.
Uh-huh.
I think that private companies will always do a better job than government agencies because you can always have competition. You can have more than one private company, and those companies will be in competition with each other and keep each other cheap and efficient. Whenever you give a resource or some job to the government, it's not in competition with anybody. There's no motivation for them to be efficient. And almost every government agency that you can name costs more money than it requires, is inefficient, and ultimately doesn't work. The health inspectors that you talk about, I mean, we don't have to have government health inspectors. That could easily be done by private companies. And, again, the price would be cheaper. The Environmental Protection Agency is supposed to be protecting our water and our air. However, when they pass a law that says chemical X is toxic and should not be allowed, the chemical companies have contributed so many millions of dollars to both the Democrats and the Republicans that the EPA will write the law that says, you know, you can't pollute with chemical X except for all the large chemical companies who have contributed so much money to the Democrats and Republicans. They basically are grandfathered in, and the law is written to allow them to pollute with chemical X. And then when you and I try to file a lawsuit, they just hold up the law and say, oh, sorry, the federal government has given us permission to do this much.
So the regulation in the end serves as the protection. Is that what you're saying?
That is correct. And so, you and I are ultimately responsible for ourselves. It's your job to put food in your mouth, your job to put shelter over your head, your job ultimately to protect yourself. And, you know, that requires personal responsibility. Anytime you give that responsibility to the government, you are giving up your decision-making power, and ultimately the government is not going to do as good a job of protecting you as you would have protected yourself.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else, Tommy?
No, I was just, so if a, say, a food establishment was serving, that they didn't eat the chicken or something refrigerated or something that could go real bad, how would I, with this system, know that I would be protected, whereas otherwise there would be somebody who could shut them down? Would a concern be able to do that?
First of all, there is no guarantee. Even with the health agencies, there's always this risk. Look at Tylenol. Somebody, obviously a lunatic, had generated poison in several bottles of Tylenol, and people died. What was Tylenol's response? They removed millions of dollars of product off the market, and they did that before the government had an opportunity to pass a law or require them to do that.
And they did that knowing full well that it was only a tiny percentage that could have possibly been tainted.
Almost everything they took off the shelf was probably a perfectly good product, but they did that because it was in their own best interest. There was no health agency in the early 1920s and 30s. People would get off the boats. The immigrants would come here. They would set up a hot dog stand. Well, if you have a hot dog stand and you sell a product that makes your customers sick, what do you think is going to happen to your business? I mean, word is going to get out that your hot dogs are tainted, and nobody's going to buy your product. Even if you only had one package of bad hot dogs, you know, your hot dogs may be perfectly fine right now, but people aren't going to buy them. So it is in your best interest. It's always in your best interest to make sure that your customers are happy. If you flew on an airline and the airplanes started falling out of the sky, how many airplanes do you think would have to crash for a company before people would stop flying that airline?
It happened to Delta.
It doesn't have to get to that point, though, where airplanes are falling out of the sky.
Well, but it doesn't have to, though, Tommy, because think of it like this. One of the best-selling magazines in America is Consumer Reports.
Right.
And people read Consumer Reports and they say, you know what? Consumer Reports says these are good running shoes. I'm going and buying them. They say that a Chevy Blazer blows up after two years. I'm not buying a Chevy Blazer. And they make their decisions based on free information. Consumer Reports isn't a government agency, but they're trusted because they make their money by doing a good job evaluating people's products and services.
But more importantly than that, we already have the FAA. And the FAA doesn't keep airplanes from falling out of the sky. We have airplane crashes all the time.
Okay.
I'm just looking back
at a time of our country when a lot of industries could regulate themselves. And I'm not saying I'm into total regulation, but look at, when Upton Sinclair wrote his great novel, yes, meat companies were still packing garbage in their stuff, and before government regulation came, it didn't matter. People were getting sick. They just sell to a different group of people. So I'm just looking at that one area in our economy that obviously self-policing, having been in that industry before, doesn't necessarily always
work.
We had
Enron.
Hey, make this your quick answer, Michael, because we got to move on.
Okay. Enron was corrupt. It was supposedly monitored by the SEC. You have corrupt people in Enron. Who's going to monitor them? The corrupt people in government?
Obviously not.
There.
All right. Thank you very much for the call, Tommy. Appreciate it. All right. Let's go to Janet. Janet, you have a question for Mr. Badnarik.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Janet.
I was wondering if any of the states want to secede once you're president, are you going to allow them?
Absolutely. The Declaration of Independence was a statement of secession. We seceded from England, and you have a right to join the Union, and you have the equal right to leave the Union. Think of it as a marital relationship. If a man and woman get married for whatever reason, they think they're going to live happily ever after, and for whatever reason the woman decides, well, I'm not happy here, and she leaves. Can the man go and drag her back by the hair and say, hey, I said till death do you part? I mean, that's not okay, and that's exactly what Abraham Lincoln did to the South. The South decided they wanted to leave, and Abraham Lincoln went back and dragged the South back by the hair. That is not acceptable. The answer is we all have the right to secede, and yes, if we believe in the Declaration of Independence, we inherently believe in the right of secession.
Sorry, Janet. We're all out of time for this segment. We're coming right back with Michael Badnarik, Libertarian candidate for President of the United States. All right, folks, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton. The website is weekendinterviewshow.com. If anybody wants to go and check out the archives of any of the previous interviews, they're all up there at weekendinterviewshow.com, including a previous interview of Michael Badnarik and soon to be this one as well. So in wrapping up here, Mr. Badnarik, you mentioned earlier your slogan, Lighting the Fires of Liberty, One Heart at a Time. And I'm really interested to know what it's been like for you in all this time that you've been running for president, going on 2 years now, or maybe a little more than that. What's it been like for you traveling around this country and preaching the message of liberty to people?
Well, it has been good and bad. The bad part is that I get an average of 4 hours of sleep a night. I do 6 to 12 interviews a day. We travel a lot. We eat bad food. We are interrupted, by interviews that we didn't know that we had. And it's been very, very difficult living out of a suitcase for at least the last 10 months. But it's been really good as well. There are people all over the United States who are waking up to the fact that the government is not doing anything in our best interests, that our liberties are at stake and they are being violated. And people all across the United States are looking for another option. They are disenchanted with the Democrats, they're disgusted with the Republicans, and they want someone that they can vote for, that they can respect. And being a Libertarian candidate this year is a little bit like selling ice water in hell. I mean, you don't really have to do a lot of advertising. I got onto an elevator, dressed casually with a campaign shirt, 5 or 6 people on the elevator, and one gentleman spotted my shirt and said, Badnarik for president? I've never heard of him. So I shook hands with everybody, announced that I was running for president, and suddenly everyone was willing to vote for me. And sadly, the only qualifications I had at that moment is that I was not George Bush and I was not John Kerry.
You got my vote, Mr. President.
I appreciate that. And I think that the Libertarian Party is going to show America that we are not satisfied with the status quo next Tuesday. I suspect that we are going to be getting very significant vote totals on Election Day, and that the Democrats and Republicans are going to have to acknowledge that we are a significant political force, that we are not willing to sit by and be subjected to the status quo. And I just want to remind your listeners, as they probably know, that if you vote for the lesser of two evils and your candidate wins, you still get evil. The only way to get liberty is to vote for liberty. And libertarians believe that in any decision about your life, either you can make that decision or government can make that decision for you. And we are overwhelmingly in favor of you making your own decisions in life. And for anybody who is interested in the foundations of the Constitution, I'm very pleased that my book has finally been published. The title of the book is Good to Be King. Is already on the Amazon.com bestsellers list, and it explains why we need any government at all, why the Founding Fathers picked a constitutional republic, and what the legitimate responsibilities of the federal government are. And I think it's going to really continue lighting the fires of liberty long after the election.
All right. Thank you very much, Michael Badnarik. His website is badnarik.org, B-A-D-N-A-R-I-K. I wish you the best of luck, sir. I promise you have my vote, and I urge everyone to go out there and stick it to the man and vote for Michael Badnarik. He's the Libertarian candidate for President of the United States.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you, sir. Talk to you soon. All right, everybody. It's the Weekend Interview Show, and we'll be right back with my good friend, Anthony Gregory.